Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. I'm Chris Wilmerding, your host. The show is a series of conversations with business owners about their beliefs and values and which beliefs and values they want to share with the next generation. If you want to be a guest on the show, simply wait until the end of this 20-minute segment and we'll provide a link. Simply sign in at that point and we'll be in touch with more information. Now, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the Business Legacy Podcast, and I have a very special host guest today. It's Michael Anton Mansour, and he is the general manager of Pittsburgh City United. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. If you want me to host, you just have to get me a really cool microphone.
Definitely.
Honored to be on the show, man. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Michael, let's get right into it. How did you get into being the general manager of a football team?
The one fortunate aspect of owning a football team is you can hire yourself, and then you have the unfortunate, but it becomes a little bit easier, the ability to fire yourself. So when you start a new soccer team and with this type of a concept, I always evaluate the hats that myself or other members of the organization have to wear when there's more than one, and with a pretty much a fine tooth comb. Is it working? Remove bias, things like that. And the general manager aspect was something that I was planning to entertain in the beginning, with limited experience. And it's quite incredible. It's quite incredible. We've exploded as a team from announcing that we mandate headgear, announcing that we are partnered with the Alzheimer's Association, the first in the world to do that, announcing that we're exploring fan ownership to be the first Pittsburgh sports franchise to offer ownership to the fans through the WeFunder site. I mean, all those things are business related, CEO related, but the GM perspective, that doesn't mean that, that means I'm a good GM because I'm a good businessman. That's not what general management is in sports. General management is the acquisition of players, but not just the acquisition of players, the level of trust, stability. Your team is predicated upon the staff and who you're able to bring on board. Sometimes the messaging can actually predicate that. We believe in the quantifiable reality behind a philanthropic effort and a strong message. And any new franchise, I don't know what the message would be. I would not just have started a soccer franchise. Pittsburgh City United would have been probably a different name, something cool like Inter Pittsburgh or something like that, if you're a soccer fan out there. And there's a lot of fun things about that, but my entire life has been focused on sustaining purpose and also trying to define a quantifiable purpose, because that's actually very important. And what we wanted to do was, let's instill a vision, like this partnership with the association, a vision to educate the players and to remove, I say this a lot, on some of the press conferences and things like that you guys have seen, but to remove the individual, the pressures that are placed on the individual to succeed. And this could be quantifiable in any business. Someone wants to move up the ladder, right? So they're thinking and they're pressuring themselves and decisions they might make, even though they're so gifted and talented in so many ways, it can actually be the wrong decision because it becomes a very self-focused decision, and businesses don't grow on self-focus. They grow on universal, progression. How do you remove that? Well, you can remove that by having a team like ours, where you come to, these great players that have came to in such a short period of time, where their focus and their purpose is constantly reminded, because these are the healthcare workers that keep them safe. The realities and fear of Alzheimer's and dementia and the difficulties of realizing the sport you're playing is also very conducive to the potentials of that, with the head concussions and things like that. I mean, those are all things that made my job as a GM very easy because I didn't go out and find these World Cup, experienced national players and, these golden generation high transfer, market potential players. Or the Barry Smith, the Scottish Premiership manager, who would be probably, I would assume, the best, if not one of the best MLS managers in the world. They called me And then my function as a GM and the way I evaluated myself was my ability to be transparent, genuine, and respectful of the culture, no matter who it was, whether it was talking to, a translator in Haiti because, of stuff that I've done in the past, focusing on culture, connecting. And, this has done a lot in our team. This is a connection of the heart. And it is amazing how much you can inspire employees, or in this case, players, to go above and beyond. Their performance level is high, and we're undefeated for a good reason. Their approach to life as a person is so much more significant. And as much as these players should have all the ambition in the world, their ambition is now something bigger than themselves. And you see it in a lot of the player interviews, and it's quite incredible. And Coach Smith called me. That was an incredible conversation. I remember thinking to myself, wow, I'm going to have a real GM moment. This is not FIFA, this is real. This is a Hall of Famer and in his prime. I mean, people say Hall of Fame is a Hall of Fame player. Now in his prime, though, he's Scottish Premiership manager and with an excellent record. And it was because of the headgear and because of the connection with Alzheimer's that he wanted to have that conversation. Barry Smith is not somebody who goes and jumps on a team to jump on a team. He is a very genuine, humble, but also a very smart individual. And I had to perform the function that every GM probably should look at in any aspect, or an owner who's trying to acquire talent. I had to really be as honest as possible, to a point where I explained to him after he had said he wanted to do it. I said, well, before you say that, it's important to know that we may play some teams because we're in Division Four. Some teams are going to have strong funding. We're still developing our funding. We're still inquiring, with sponsors, and our brand is getting bigger. Yes, but there's still a process. But we might be playing on football fields. And I had explained to him that it was American football fields because he's from Scotland and football is obviously, it actually makes sense. But people say, oh, that's a deterrent. No, it's not, because it's actually quite the opposite. You may lose a little bit of that initial interest when you are that honest. It may look like you're trying to push that person away, but what you're actually doing is solidifying that relationship. And that is why Coach Smith is, and we will have an announcement, but you guys, you can get a little bit of a scoop on it. But he will be coming on as a minority owner on the team. So, these type of levels of, and what's incredible is, as we move up and sponsorships are more aware, as they're starting to come in, we're starting to evaluate whether they're appropriate sponsors for us. The level of acquisitions from a player perspective is off the charts. I have 5 Division One, Division Two players from around the world for each position inquiring and wanting to come here. The soccer player, in this case, like employees, and never doubt the human condition. When you're hiring an employee, never doubt the ability to create a foundation where inspiration is a inspiration of something bigger than themselves is a truly quantifiable reality, and your performance levels increase. Because I've seen it. 50% of the profits, team profits from tickets and merchandise. People go, how are you going to make any money? Well, my argument to that was very simple. We're not going after soccer fans. So soccer fans would be amazing. Soccer fans can be healthcare workers. But we fight for the healthcare workers. We're fighting for our future when we wear the headgear. Have our players been laughed at? Yeah. Yeah. It's really quite rewarding. I guess there's a little bit of a competitive spirit in that when you see players with great pride and from so many places around the world. I mean, we have players from Nigeria, from Cameroon, from Ivory Coast, from Zambia, from Colombia. We have players from the USVI. We have 3 national players from the USVI. We have players from Haiti, players from here in the US. And to buy into that and never question it once, while the players are laughing and seeing them win, and win in really strong ways too, because we've actually not even fully had our team together because of all these stars coming in. So we're 2 games in, we're 2-0 with 2 incredible opponents that we've been able to beat. But we have not had a full team you know, together in practice through this because of pandemics and things of that nature. Now we do, and the world gets to see more and more. So you get to see the potential of something and actually succeed while that potential is happening, right? You know, is still developing. And it's exciting. It's very exciting. We have more news and stuff too that'll come out, but we have to adapt. It's a pandemic. So I'm sure you have questions in regards to that.
What does it feel like to see all the players come from different areas of the world and succeed? What is that? What goes through your mind?
Well, Paul, I come from multiple descents. We had talked about this before. It's a tough question for me because I grew up in so many different areas and cultures. You know, I spent my summers in Mexico and being Syrian and Catalonian and other things. You know, culture was such an important thing, but I've always been fortunate to be around so many different cultures. I was never really technically forced to one. I always said, I don't know if I have a culture. My culture is multicultural, if that makes sense. There was never like, you have to be this. My Syrian family never told me you have to do this and do that. You know, my Jewish family never told me to do this, but they let me be a part of it. So kind of like the documentaries and things of that nature that I've done, it's always about the culture of coexistence. It's about letting people speak their mind. So I guess I got a little emotional and I apologize, but it's outside of watching my children being born. It has been the greatest experience of my life. They're incredible human beings and they go and they lift you up in so many ways. I wish the world would continue to see that when people can have perceptions of people based on where they're from and things like that. And, you know, or sometimes when you have, like, for example, we have two players who don't speak English very well. And they're the ones from Haiti, our Golden Generation World Cup guys. And so instead of doing the prototypical, oh, well, you have to learn English because you're here in America, I did not take a lot of convincing from me for the entire team to commit to start to learn Haitian Creole. Mm. Because, again, we bring this together. And it's just the opportunities are so enlightening. And they're so enlightening. The world is a beautiful place. Sometimes you need to see, you don't have to travel the world to see the world. You just need to surround yourself with people from different parts of the world and people who have seen it. And their vibrance, their energy, their who they are as individuals is inspiring. You know, I've seen the world through my players and you know, I love them.
Mm-hmm. You may have already answered this question, but what do you like most about doing this? What do you most enjoy?
I'm a very focused person. So, you know, when I say that is, I always say purpose. You know, I couldn't do, when I was a senior living SEO and I had said that to them, you know, at any company I have, I was like, what is the purpose? You know, I did sales and marketing, you know, IntegraCare. I was like, well, I have to find a purpose. So I developed an algorithm for respiratory and hospital admissions at senior living SEO. The function was to be able to develop a program so that placement agencies were not the first point of contact, that the actual senior living communities were, because I experienced that. And it meant something to me to be able to help these senior living communities who are struggling, not have to pay astronomical costs because, you know, you have a conference center and they call up and they go, oh yeah, well, here's the five that work for us on the piece of paper in front of us. I wanted to try to create something. So this was, so the purpose is usually so definitive for me, and in this case, so strong that I don't have time to usually think about, like, you know, what I love the most about it and things of that nature. But I have to say it is the people. It is watching these players, the experience of these players. It doesn't matter if they're a good day or a bad day. We're a family, and to see them come and develop it. Individual purpose is great. Universal purpose is one of the most inspiring things you can ever be around. It's enlightening. The every day is enlightening. We work every day. You know, and now I'm interim manager until we get Barry over the pond. So I have a managerial record, which is hilarious. Thank you, FIFA. that's where I learned all my formations. But you know, we're up 5 a.m. and you know we're practicing and wanting to get better, and we're in the tape rooms, and the staff and has done an incredible job. From Karusha Jazzy to my wife and producing partner for many of my films, who's also our CEO, Ty Biro. It was one tough cookie. She's the real boss, but she keeps this functioning. But yeah, I mean, there is not an overstatement to say that I have gone many of 48 hours days and inspiration drives you. I realized I had one cup of coffee and I was working till 5 in the morning. I couldn't believe it. But inspiration is quite enlightening. Then eventually, though, as things start to progress and, you know, you have, it's been an amazing experience, but you can imagine COVID variant, you know, we lost a bunch of fields. We had to start adapting pretty aggressively. The U.S. Open, which is an amazing honor. We were a special invite and for the second round of the U.S. Open. Qualifying rounds, which is incredible. So a lot of good things happen, and then of course a lot of things that are very difficult. None of them are within the organization, which is a beautiful thing to have. But you will be able to, and it's nice to be able to deal with those conflicts. You know, we didn't know if we were going to have a field as popular as we were with all of our generation and the press and worldwide attention and all that stuff. What we're doing, we really didn't know if we were going to field. We had to forfeit games. That's just the realities of ever-changing environment. So you have to think ahead. I don't want to go into it unless you have a question about that relating to, you know, how we approach the digital aspects of that. I can answer that, but I don't want to ramble. So.
No, this is good. I think as you were going through that question that came to mind was, what did you learn about yourself while going through that process over the last 2 years? Like, what awareness did you?
I have to, you know, I think all of us delved into our minds quite extensively, because all of us were even with family, we felt alone because we disconnected with each other. And I have to be honest with you, it was the artist side of me, I guess, maybe the filmmaker side of me, the person who paces, thinking about, you know, quantifiable algorithms to the human condition and how you can, you know, inspire. Like I said, as a nonprofit, we would have had $1 million, no doubt. But, you know, as a for-profit, we can actually inspire and build our portfolio and actually buy into Europe and do this in other places to show other businesses that you actually can do this. And it's actually, if you have financial backing, things like that, which we didn't. But if you have those resources, that this will actually improve your, you know, who you are and what you are. The pandemic, in all truth, was a terrible, sad thing for a lot of people. And I know a lot of people were affected by that sense of loneliness, but, you know, I was with my family. I have my one daughter, you know, she from a previous marriage, that was the hardest part, not being able to see her because, you know, those lockdown was horrifically terrible and broke my heart every day. But outside of that, I was kind of in my element. Because I'm one of those people, you know, all of us understand that a little bit, I think. I don't need to go out, you know, socialize. I'll do if I have to in a network event, or if it's something that for a charity, or if it's something my kids want to go to. But I enjoy my time with my mind. And so it wasn't, yeah. I mean, we released that film for free instead of Amazon. That was a nice thing to do. I didn't learn really a lot about myself. If anything, it just had more time to plan. You know, I didn't pop the team out of the blue. Everything was very, I plan quite aggressively because, you need to plan for anything that can happen and you need to be inspired, you know, like thinking about the process and rather dreaming about one solution, you know, and then that's your inspiration and that's what keeps you going. Now, there's no one solution to anything. It's constantly evolving. So there's no one answer to anything. So that always drives me. So the pandemic also gave me an opportunity to really self-evaluate, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Out of all the planning and thinking over the years, what would you say is your best business decision you've ever made?
Oh, Pittsburgh City United FC. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, even though I've had success, significant success, I think, you know, with boosting corporate development, you know, with KeyCare, we were at five communities. And then after a couple of years, because I introduced the patient care advocate program. So we removed the sales aspect of marketing, and that's not what we were doing. We were sending marketers there who were following, you know, the patients, communicating with the family, communicating with the case managers. That's what these marketers actually do. You know, they're advocates. They're true patient care advocates. So we just called them what they were. And, you know, we focused on introducing telemedicine. My father introduced telemedicine into home health, which was pretty groundbreaking. And I was part of that team very early on. But nothing compares to Pittsburgh City United. It's very interesting. And I know it will with the team as we look into Europe. And I guess there'll be announcements. And because we're very aggressively looking into places like, you know, England and Spain and things like that, because it's a lot easier. I'm just going to be honest. It's so much easier. You know, they have promotion delegation. If you succeed, you're rewarded. Here in Division Four, if you succeed, you get by. You know what I mean? And what we do is we are finding and continue to find a way to go beyond that, a way to succeed instead of getting by. And it starts with that brand awareness. I mean, we talked about that a little bit before, but it's being this popular for the right reasons is a really good thing. It's something that helps inspire me every day. So it's the best decision I ever made. I mean, this is incredible.
Let's switch over to other gears. What's the worst business decision you've ever made?
Oh man. Strategically. I know it sounds really, I'm getting real specific with this, but it'll be short. You can imagine that. I'm capable of a short answer every once in a while, but, there's a little bit of a story behind it. I was tasked to, I don't do politics anymore. It's not really an interest of me. It really wasn't then either. It was just more about representation. You guys probably figured out watching this thing that I'm very much about, you know, representation and doing the right thing. But I was 24, I believe, or 25, and I was tasked to run a state Senate campaign. And it ended up being, at the time, the most expensive state Senate campaign in Pennsylvania history, because we were against an incumbent, and the incumbent actually had to drop out of the race because we were up by 18 points. So all of a sudden, I'm the hotshot campaign person, and our candidate's the hotshot guy. And then the other team came in, and, you know, the other person, they dropped about 2.8 million. And then that was like 2008 or something. That's a lot for a state Senate. I did not listen as much as I would have liked. We had an incredible ground campaign, incredible. We had maybe 30,000 or 40,000 houses. Like, we had so many people, 400 volunteers, all of these things. And we were doing a lot of the right things, but there was two things that affected us and why we lost that campaign. The first one was not entirely up to us. And I'm proud of myself for kind of fighting against it, but they had a committee, and a lot of them were from people that weren't from the area. Well, it's hard to understand messaging or define messaging specifically in a local election if you're not from the area. It's not label based, you know. And Westmoreland County figured that out. This was before they did. This was before when everyone thought Westmoreland County was all blue, all Democratic, all whatever. Now it's a new state. I mean, every presidential cycle, we know that they're going to go heavy on red. So there was just an assumption. So assumptions were made, and I am proud of myself fighting, but here's where my mistake was. I let that kind of consume me. I mean, I know I was young. I let that kind of consume a little bit of my decision process, and I did not listen. I actually did, in some ways, even though I was there, I did not listen to a couple of our field strategists who suggested that we sustain our candidate's base where he was from, you know, where he had a strong reputation. I looked at the numbers, and I did exactly what the committee group was doing, and I didn't realize it. I was young and naive, you know, so I did not realize. And if we go into the film world, I mean, it's all day. I can give you a million. I mean, every film I've ever done is a bad business decision. I mean, come on. Even the good ones. But it's funny because, you know, when I sit down with investors, you know, or even sponsors, a lot of having to pitch, because in film they go, oh, well, you know, this is, and it's the standard. Well, we'll show you a comparable. It's a script. All it is a script and a story. But they'll show you films that are comparable and see how successful they were. And it's total. I mean, it's the only thing that's there, but it's total, you know, BS. And I held back, by the way. I didn't know if any children watch this. You know, we might have some future business leaders in America, but it's total BS. You know, and having to pitch that and represent that, because I believed in the story so much, even though the stories would work. You know what I mean? Tesla. I mean, I wrote the Tesla script that became very, you know, very well known. And I think still has, I don't know, I haven't checked. I think it still has like 20,000 followers for a script that's never been made for the film. But, you know, it's impossible to be honest and transparent, because that's not, you know, I mean, you can say it's a script and that's it, and here's comparables. But the second you show comparables, in my opinion, that is not the respectful transparency that is needed. You know what I mean? I don't, mm-hmm. that does not develop a strong relationship. That's that's something that's, yeah, that's very, very important to me. And I'm so glad I've been able to do this. You know, that's, I might go back to the Pittsburgh City, but it's through those, you know, mistakes, you know, of dealing with that type of a platform in film that really helped and enlighten me on the opportunity when you are honest and you say, hey, thank you, Hall of Fame, you know, manager. I know this is going to be great for our team, but just before you sign anything, we're going to be playing on crappy football fields and driving in a school bus until, you know, until sponsors come in. And it's very rewarding. Honesty can be very rewarding. Yeah. So you learn from your mistakes, right?
Yeah, definitely. Now, given all your experience, everything that's going on, all the business decisions you've made, life decisions, whatever it is, when you look back, or now even, when you think of the word legacy, what do you think of?
Universal. And I know that sounds cliche, but I'd like to define that. I think a legacy, in my opinion, is what an entire generation leaves behind. You know, not just a single person. So it's important, yeah, I guess, with universal progression, you know, which again, all of these things are kind of supplemented into those foundations. You know, universal progression is important. So if you can make something work, philanthropic, you know, charity aspect, things like that, then all of a sudden, boom, you know, it's now the corporate, you know, capitalism is now mixed with philanthropic efforts. And now you actually enhance capitalism. You know what I mean? And I'm probably utilizing capitalism too fluidly now, but you enhance, let's just say this, you enhance economic growth and spread awareness. So you can actually help people at the same time, you know, help your business and create the funds and wealth that, you know, that is necessary to move forward and create more good. So when I think of legacy, I can't think of myself at all. I think a complete generational. What I want to leave is a generation that has a legacy that people remember, or they continue to evolve from and inspire themselves, so we can constantly take steps forward. That's what I think about.
Ah, you spoiled my next question, which was what type of legacy you would want to leave.
I've been told I do that a lot. Yeah, well, there you go. I'm sorry. Well, you got to run that in, but I think I asked you. I guess, yeah. I mean, there's really nothing else. I mean, in the end, you know, being a father is I guess without question. It's the greatest thing ever, and inspired me to get outside of the individual aspect. So even though the only time my kids thought it was cool was when I did a comedic neurolinguistic rap song, all of a sudden came out of nowhere. I did, you know, I'm actually kind of funny, guys. I'm not this serious. But it was a neurolinguistic rap song. It was like a science experiment turned into a comedy rap song. And we put it on, CD Baby, and then they got Apple, iTunes, all that stuff. Well, TikTok. It was on TikTok, and I did not know that. So my 8-year-old comes in, at the time she's 7, and she goes, "Dad, you on TikTok?" And I'm like, "Really?" I was like, "Really?" And I was like, "Yeah." So I was like, "What, for what?" And she goes, "For your song." And she played the song. So that like 4 minutes, and then my one daughter was like, "Oh, that's cool." And then my other was like, "Cool." And then my stepson was like, man, and he's older, and you know, but anyway, so I spent the rest of the day chasing my kids going, you want to do a TikTok video? You want to do a TikTok video? that was it. I got those 5 minutes. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, wanting your kids to be proud, but mostly it's, you know, that's probably not going to happen a whole lot. They are very proud of what I'm doing. I know that, but it can't be like the driving force. It is what you leave behind. And, mm-hmm. And I want them to share the same reflection that I have of inspiring those around them. You know what I mean? Just to do more for each other. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, then it spreads and not just them. Like I said, you know, Paul, I'm sure you've done great things for people. Hopefully after this conversation, you're going to be like, you know what? How can I think of a quantifiable reality that can be branded through a philanthropic effort and business at the same time? Because that's the goal. Mm-hmm. The legacy is everyone is capable. Everyone is capable of doing, you know, what we've done. And that was before we ever kicked a ball. I think we proved that point. So that was nice.
Wow. This was fun.
I know, man. Again. If you imagine one of my players, this is like how every session goes.
Definitely. Well, again, Michael Anton Mansour, GM of Pittsburgh City United Football. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Business Legacy Show. If you're a thoughtful business owner who would like to be a guest on this program, please visit businesslegacypodcast.com/guest. That's businesslegacypodcast.com/guest. Now, if you got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you do that, tag us with #BusinessLegacyPodcast. Again, #BusinessLegacyPodcast. Each month, we scour Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. We pick one winner from each platform, and you get crowned king or queen of that social media. What do you win? We're going to promote you and your business to our audience of over 150,000 people totally free. Now, can you hook us up in your podcast player right now? Please give us a thumbs up or a rating and a review. We promise to read it all and take action. We believe that a person's legacy is the most important thing someone can leave the next generation, and your feedback helps us fulfill our mission. And while you're at it, hit that subscribe button. You know why? Because every week for 15 minutes, you are going to be inspired and motivated to leave a lasting and meaningful legacy. My name is Chris Womerding. Let's connect on the socials. You'll find all the stuff we're doing at businesslegacypodcast.com. Again, businesslegacypodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and thank you for being part of the Business Legacy Movement.